coefficients anymore, apparently, according to some of the speeches on the floor yesterday.
Not at this pay rate.
Yeah.
Very poor professional.
Colleagues, I think we better try and rein in our enthusiasm.
Way to start that one off, Paul.
Mr. Williams is a student at Wyoming University. Certainly, he can do better than... we probably cannot, so welcome aboard. Thank you very much. Good morning. We're going to do Senate Bill 520 and 521 first. What we'll do is open a public hearing on Senate Bill 520. And colleagues, we'll ask for a brief explanation. I think you all remember these are energy conservation bills. They extend a sunset date and expand some treatments, but I'll let our good colleague from the Senate Revenue Committee explain these bills again to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 520, as you will remember from last time, eliminates some sunsets and modifies several of the alternative energy incentive programs administered by the Office of Energy. There's a property tax exemption. Sunset, which is repealed, to income tax.
Pardon me, let me correct the chair's egregious error this morning. We were not scheduled for public hearing. This is only for work session this morning. Public hearing was never open.
Plausible
deniability. We may as well demoralize Mr. Williams immediately. we are in work session on this bill. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Senate Bill 520 eliminates sunsets on several of the alternative energy incentive programs. The committee requested an amendment, which you should have before you, -1 amendment, which moves the sunset on the alternative energy system property tax exemption from July 1, 2002, which it is under current law, out to July 1, 2012. In the original bill, this sunset was repealed outright. Adopting this amendment would not change the revenue impact of the bill, and that is estimated to be minus $2.42 million in 2001-2003, as shown or should be shown on the revenue impact.
Colleagues, I can't imagine a better way for us to spend $2 million in the biennium. This is an issue. It's come home to all Oregonians relative to the cost of electrical energy and the ability of citizens to find mechanisms to conserve and to use alternative systems to create energy. The two most important words in this bill, I believe, are the words fuel cell. I think this technology offers some incredible opportunity for the future. We want to do everything we can to incent this behavior conservation, and I think it's entirely appropriate that we put this sunset date out 10 years. It does honor the request of some interested parties to require the legislature to revisit this issue in a decade. We'll do that if the chair or if the committee so desires, but the chair would accept and consider motions to the modify the bill.
Mr. Vice Chair. -1 amendments to Senate Bill 520.
The Vice Chair moves the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 520. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Minnis.
When did we have a hearing on this bill?
This bill was heard prior on 220. We also had the introduction first reading on 2-5. We had the referral of revenue to 6. We had the public hearing.
I think that was a day that the Judiciary Committee was in for a call, correct?
Further questions? Mm-hmm. Hearing none, is there any objections to the motion to move the -1? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Vice Chair.
Move Senate Bill 520 to the floor with the due pass.
The Vice Chair moves Senate Bill 520 to the floor with the due pass recommendations. Any questions? Yes, the Senator Minnis.
Or just to amend the motion to include as amended.
As amended, as part of the record, as amended was the motion. Any questions on the motion? Further questions? Any objections to the motion? So ordered. Mr. Vice Chair, would you carry 520 to the floor with the due pass recommendation? So ordered. Open a work session on the companion bill, Senate Bill 521. And perhaps a bit of orientation.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 521 modifies and expands several business energy tax credit programs. Last time, the committee adopted the Dash 1 amendment, which makes some additional changes to the business energy tax credit program. You should have a two revenue impact statements, one for the base bill, Senate Bill 521, and then one for the Dash 1 amendments. The total impact of adopting the amendments and the base bill is the sum of the two. So in the 2001-2003 biennium, total impact would be minus 0.293 million plus minus 0.81 million for a total of minus $1.103 million.
Any questions on the explanation? Any questions on the aggregate revenue impact? And then, as we adopted the Dash 1 amendments to 521, I believe we have it effective. Okay, and then to anticipate questions, we had heard this bill, we had a work session on 119, I'm sorry, no. 220. So, colleagues, we're in work session. The chair will entertain motions.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Vice Chair.
Move Senate Bill 521 as amended to the floor with the due pass.
Any questions on the motion? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. Senate Bill 521 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I'll ask Senator Starr to carry this bill, since this is a bill that does energy conservation on a commercial basis. I'll ask him to carry the bill. It's ordered. Colleagues, so that closes the work session on Senate Bill 521. I think we've done a good piece of work here. Any comments for the record on 520 or 521? Senator Corcoran.
Well, I talked to one of the utility folks, Mr. Chair. I think it was the electric co-ops, and I think it would be very interesting to have a fuel cell display. Maybe we can do it in concert with the putting the bill up for vote in the Senate or something. Everybody talks about these fuel cells, but I think myself included, very few people are really aware of the technology steps that go into it. Everybody knows that the byproduct is harmless, but nobody knows what the front end of it looks like.
Unlike the product of our legislature, not harmless.
The difference between a political and a horse race, Mr. Chair, is that in a horse race, the whole horse races. Remember that.
We need rim shots if we're going to do these kind of one-liners. The fact of the matter is many of our citizens want off the grid, and it benefits every one of our citizens to have citizens creating more energy than they consume. This incents that behavior. So I think it's a great thing. Fuel cells, I agree with Senator Corcoran, almost seem like magic. They're a little bit of science, and maybe they're a lot of science, and a little bit of alchemy. And if the output is water and oxygen, and they're tremendously efficient, I can't imagine at some point in time that every home isn't outfitted with some sort of energy conservation device, likely a fuel cell. So we read a letter the other day about the electric meter running backward toward the utility as opposed to running forward at the expense of to the owner of the property. It would be a great idea if all of us had this technology.
Maybe we can ask the energy guy to...
If Mr. Brenneman would come forward. We are not in public session. We're still in this session. Invited testimony. Mr. Brenneman.
John Brenneman, for the record, I have a client, Idle Power, who has purchased a fuel cell company in Bend, and now call it IDATEC. And if you'll give me the date and place and time, I'll see if I can have them set up a demonstration for you.
Great.
The date is at your options pending approval by the facilities folks in the...
For July.
The place is the Capitol Building, preferably the visitors area, and again, the time would be all day, I hope, so that every legislator and every member of the public gets an opportunity to see what is a fuel cell, how do they work, and are they as magical as they appear to be, or is this just an evolution in technology that will expect to become as pedestrian as Palm Pilots and laptops and cellular phones?
July 2001, Mr. Chair.
Before July 2001, if possible. Any further issues to come before us on 52521? If not, we'll move on. House Bill 2031 and House Bill 2029 are on our agenda today. I see Elizabeth Martin Mahar is making her way forward to orient the committee on these two important bills. Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's do House Bill 2029 first.
Okay.
To orient the committee, we'll open... Well, let's just get an orientation to the committee, and then we'll go into public hearing.
Okay. Mr. Chairman and committee members, what you have before you with House Bill 2029A is it is applying the personal property tax collection laws to certain real property, machinery, and equipment. It is going to allow tax collectors to secure the machinery and equipment if the tax collector has a reason to believe that that machinery and equipment will leave the area. It's going to specify that only real machinery and equipment which is owned separately from the land or the buildings will be affected by this measure. So currently, machinery and equipment is taxed as real property. So if a taxpayer does not pay the property taxes, it can take 6 years from the date of delinquency till the end of foreclosure. During this period of time, the real machinery and equipment could be removed from the county, and there would be not any property then to foreclose on at the end of 6 years. Now, between tax years 1996 and 97 and 99-2000, the amount of uncollected real property is on average about $99 million in the current year. But on average, what you're seeing is about 95% of all that real property and about 97% of all personal property are collected in the current year. And one of the reasons for the differences then between these collection ratios of the amount of property that can be collected in the current year between real and personal property is the difference in the procedures that county tax collectors have between personal and real property. And so this ability for the tax collector to actually secure personal property really helps in being able to get property taxes collected in the current year. A recent survey that the Oregon tax collectors did of five counties, Washington, Multnomah, Clackamas, Umatilla, and Jackson, identified $2.2 million in real machinery and equipment that were uncollected in 2001. Those uncollected taxes represent on average about 16% of all the taxes that are imposed on real machinery and equipment. And so this ratio of uncollected to certified taxes from a county survey for machinery and equipment is about 3 times higher than the overall real property ratio of uncollected to certified taxes for a 99-2000 year. So basically, the revenue impact from this bill is that it's going to help tax collectors in collecting this real machinery and equipment in the current year. It's estimated that more than $4.3 million in property taxes are not collected in the current year on real machinery and equipment. So it is estimated that about 4.4% of the current year's uncollected property taxes on real machinery and equipment is not collected. So in subsequent years, you will see a portion of these delinquent taxes on the real machinery and equipment be collected under current law. But what this is trying to do is help eliminate some of that uncollected tax in the outer years because the property has been removed from the county. It's estimated that at least 99% of the certified property taxes are collected after 2 years. It is estimated that annually there is approximately $2 million in uncollected taxes on real machinery and equipment after 2 years. Basically about $1 million left in taxes after 3 years of collecting real machinery and equipment. So with House Bill 2029, it will give tax collectors the authority to pursue quicker and collect more of the $4.3 million in uncollected taxes annually on real machinery and equipment. So it's estimated that approximately $2 million in additional taxes could be collected potentially in the 2001-03 from passage of this measure.
Questions for Ms. Martin-Mahar? Colleagues, I'm going to open the public hearing, and I'm going to call forward Diane Belt from the Oregon Association of County Tax Collectors. Public hearing is open. The chair does have questions. Colleagues, we all know that there is a difference between personal property and real property. There's a difference between personal, real, and fixtures and equipment. I've not seen the term or familiarized myself with the term real property machinery or real personal property. Perhaps we could get explanations of those terms.
Be happy to do that.
Yep.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Diane Belt, and I am with the Oregon Association of County Tax Collectors, and I'm also the personal property tax collector for Washington County. And the bill before you today is House Bill 2029, and this House bill deals with the ability of the county tax collector to collect taxes on machinery and equipment that is being removed from the county or the state. Now, by definition, machinery and equipment are properties that are affixed to the real property. Affixed means being annexed or attached to the real property by bolts, screws, nails, or by being built into the structure. So equipment may be constructively affixed to the building or land by virtue of its weight or size. Some examples of machinery and equipment would be seed cleaning equipment, rock crushing plants, smelters, paper machines, newspaper presses, sawmills, plywood machinery, and presses, just to name a few. When machinery and equipment or fixtures are affixed to the real property and owned separately from the real property, by statute, they are assessed as real property to the owner of that equipment. So a separate account is required. If the owner of the building and the machinery and equipment are the same, then one account is created for both of those values. Because the building and land cannot be removed, a real foreclosure action will be used to collect the tax if it becomes delinquent. Now, a collection problem arises when the owner of the equipment removes it from the county or state without paying the property taxes. Because the property is taxed as real property, any delinquent taxes are collected through the real property foreclosure process that's located in Chapter 312. And I did kind of give you a flow chart in your handout to show you how that process actually works. Because the property has already left the county or the state, there's no property to foreclose on at the end of that six-year cycle. And the tax collector has absolutely no authority to stop this property from leaving the county. Now, here's an example to hopefully this will kind of put it into perspective for you. Action Business Park owns a warehouse in Beaverton. They lease the building to a manufacturing company called Brown Bags Unlimited. Brown Bags is a paper company that manufactures paper bags, and the equipment needed to produce their product is large paper machines and presses. They are affixed to the building. The owner of the building receives a real property tax statement for the structure and the land, and the owner of the equipment, Brown Bag, receives a real property tax bill for the machinery and equipment. House Bill 2029 will not change the classification of real property, but it will include the classification of machinery and equipment with the personal property statutes that deal with seizure. This will allow the county, if a situation happens where they are moving that equipment, it's big, but it can go. And it would allow the county to go out and seize that or distrain the equipment from leaving so that we can collect the tax. And I've included a table to kind of give you an idea of some of the counties. It's very fresh in my mind. This summer I had a business that moved out to California. It was $160,000 worth of machinery and equipment that I had absolutely no way to collect, and I'm not going to collect it. Had I been able to go out and talk to the folks and tell them that they can't leave it without paying the tax, we probably would have gotten the money. So it's a direct loss to our school funding. It's a direct loss to local public services. And typically when these properties leave, it's an awful lot of money. We have one right now that left, went to Japan, and it's up to $500,000 now. And I'll answer any questions.
So if the property, the personal property, is screwed down, nailed down, glued down, or otherwise permanently affixed, it becomes real?
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
Or if it's specially adapted?
That's correct.
Fixtures and equipment, which would be free from liens because they are tools or specific to the personal property of the owner, would not be fixtures or would not be real property, would not be affixed.
That's true.
So that's removable without liens.
That's right. And that comes under the personal property statutes where you file your return, you claim your personal property. And those are movable items. This typically is not supposed to be movable, but we have...
Bolted down.
Yeah, but we found out...
It'd be unbolted.
Very easily.
Okay. If it's on wheels, it's likely not subject to real property taxation.
Probably not, Mr. Chair. Most of these properties are assessed by the state of Oregon because of the value that's involved. And typically what we're dealing with a lot of times is leased equipment because it's a leasing company actually owns the equipment.
Okay.
And by statute, we have to set up a separate account because it's a different ownership.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
In the situation where the equipment is owned by another person, you certainly do have to set up a separate account.
That's true, Mr. Chair.
There's an anomaly in this. If the property is movable, then you've got an open question.
Mm-hmm.
There used to be a leasing company that leased elevator cars. In other words, they'd go in and update the elevator cars to make sure that they had all the modern safety equipment, and it was a leasing company. And people who were purchasing buildings would sometimes find that the movable property had been removed, even though they assumed that the movable property would still be within the building at the time they took possession. Are you familiar with that circumstance?
No, I have not run across that. Typically, the ones I find out about are ones that the appraiser comes by and says, "Did you know there's a big truck backed up to this?" Oh, okay.
Well, in the case I'm referring to, the elevators were missing when the new owner took the property out. So when they tried to find out what had happened to the elevator cars, they found out that movable property is not real property. And that even though they had made the assumption that the elevator cars would be in the building when they took possession, that assumption turned out to be erroneous. In other words, the new owner, the previous owner took the elevator and the new owner got the shaft.
I wonder if your elevator's going to the top floor, Mr. K.
Always. Colleagues, this explanation's been quite explicit. It answered my questions about the differences between real and personal property. Only one question remains for me, at least, and that is, if it's real property, the real property, or if the equipment is bolted down, nailed down, glued down, screwed down, or otherwise permanently affixed or adapted, it's assessed as real property, and the lien attaches to the real property, even if the property is subsequently removed. So you have a way to collect those taxes.
Mr. Chair, that's true only if the owner is the same.
Same owner.
The
different owner.
Different owner, it's a different circumstance. It's actually a separate account. It's what we call an A1 account. Because it is different ownership. I don't have a problem with accounts where the ownership is the same because it's all set up on one real property account, and if the equipment leaves, I foreclose on the real property, and I will collect the tax that way. But if it's an A1 account and that equipment leaves at the end of 6 years, there's nothing to foreclose upon.
Questions from the committee? Mr. Vice Chair.
So, we'd be moving the process to the personal property. How quickly does that allow you to collect the delinquent taxes?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, once I hear about it, I'm out there at the building knocking on the door. So I could collect it immediately.
If the owner refuses to pay, what's your recourse?
Our recourse is to seize the property and conduct an auction.
Okay.
So,
and timeline?
Timeline takes me 10 days.
You could grab the property in 10 days as opposed to a longer period of time.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bauer, yes, I can.
Which is probably pretty important because this property in 6 years, particularly in the technology area, there's nothing left of value at the end of 6 years.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bauer, we're talking about, you know, large pieces of equipment. We're talking about presses. I had a bottling company that picked up and moved to Canada, and that particular one was $200,000. And there's no way to
more in terms of some of the technological companies that are straight-lining their schedules in 3 to 5 years. Huge tools in the semiconductor industry. There's no value left after 5 years.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bauer, I guess that would be a true statement, thinking of the one that we're dealing with now, which is a rather large business in Washington County that has removed, and they're trying to retool, and there's a huge appeal. The only thing that is in our favor is that the ownership is the same on the machinery and equipment and the land, and it's a fairly substantial amount of money, and the equipment has gone back to Japan. And that's, yeah, they are trying to retool, and there is a big issue as to what is the value of that equipment now.
Excellent. Thank you for your question, Mr. Bauer. So we could alternately title this, I'll Hunt You Down. Colleagues, this does improve the efficiency of the tax collection system. It gives new tools to the tax collectors and should eventually improve efficiency and revenue. We're in the public hearing portion of Senate Bill 2029A. Is there other questions?
I just had one question.
Sir?
Are there particular segments of business that are more apt to behave this way than others?
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, I think a lot of it has to do with the economy. I know Jackson County has had some problems with a few paper mills, plywood mills. Washington County, definitely we're having trouble in the high-tech area. So I think it kind of maybe tends to lead towards what the economy is doing. Like say I had a bottling company 2 years ago that left. I have one right now that moved to California that was just a small high-tech business. And I think it kind of depends upon the economy as to what, and it's also going to be very county specific. I mean, Union County is probably not going to have the same kind of problems that I have.
Okay. Mr. Chair, the other question then is, maybe I missed this, but there's not a way currently to attach that tax lien from state to state, for instance. There's no way that the Oregon tax collection process can get to the employer that moved the bottling machine up to another state?
No, Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, if there was, I'd be 100% collected.
Okay. I just want to make sure that was the case. Because I could see you guys coming back, you know, we put this into effect and then 2 years, 4 years down the road, there's a question about, you know, what's nailed down, screwed down. If it had wheels on it and it was screwed down, you know, what are the definitions of these things?
I don't know about you, Senator Corcoran, but Ms. Belt's testimony about the 100% gave me a little chill.
Are you going home this afternoon, Mr. Chair?
with a big bottle of glue? No. Colleagues, I guess I will ask if there's anyone other than Ms. Belt here present that wishes to offer testimony on this bill. Seeing and hearing none, we'll close the public hearing, open the work session on House Bill 2029A.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Vice Chair.
Move House Bill 2029A and close to the floor with a due pass.
We've had a motion to move 2029 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any questions on the motion? Hearing and seeing none, any objections to the motion? So ordered. We need a carrier for this bill. So we want to improve the efficiency of the tax collection system.
That should be a Republican, Mr. Chair.
Senator Corcoran volunteers to carry it.
That's good. That's my take-home bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Corcoran.
I'm happy now. I can go home.
Go ahead to Senate Bill 2031.
It might be from New Mexico.
Bill, ask for Ms. Martin-Mahar to give us an orientation to House Bill 2031.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, you have House Bill 2031, A engrossed, and you also have a dash A2. So when I'll be speaking, I'll be basically talking about the changes that are already also included in the A2 amendment. What this measure does is it stipulates when the county tax collector will cancel unpaid property taxes on abandoned manufactured homes on leased and rented land. It's going to raise the current market value of abandoned market manufactured homes from $3,500 to $8,000 for a public sale to be held. And if there is no buyer at the sale of a manufactured structure, then the value of the home is going to be $8,000 or less instead of $3,500 or less, which is current law. It's going to specify four specific conditions when the county tax collector will cancel all the unpaid property taxes on an abandoned manufactured structure. To begin with, if the landlord disposes of the abandoned manufactured dwelling, which is valued less than $8,000, and there's no public option, then the property taxes will be canceled. If there is no buyer at a sale of an abandoned manufactured dwelling, and the property value is set at $8,000 or less, and the landlord destroys the property, then again, the taxes will be canceled. If there is a buyer at an abandoned manufactured dwelling sale, and the current market value of the structure is $8,000 or less, and the proceeds of the sale are insufficient to satisfy the unpaid property taxes, then the taxes are canceled. And then fourth reason is if the landlord buys a manufactured structure which has a current value of more than $8,000, but the proceeds of the sale are insufficient to pay the back taxes, and the landlord disposes of the structure, then you will have the back taxes canceled. So to just give you a little bit of background on this bill, during the 96 and 97 session, the 98-99 interims, there have been working groups discussing a variety of issues concerning manufactured structures, including abandoned homes. Senate Bill 695 passed during the 97 session, which created a new abandonment process for those manufactured homes abandoned on park owners' land. The abandoned manufactured homes could be sold, or the park managers could dispose of those homes. And then the proceeds from a sale of the abandoned home could be used to pay the tax collector as well as any other unpaid debts. But what the 97 legislation neglected to outline were the procedures for auctions that resulted in no buyer being available for a manufactured home. So then during the 99 session, there was another bill, House Bill 3098, which stipulated that if a buyer was not found for an abandoned manufactured home in a park, the park manager could pay for the cost of disposing of the home in exchange for a waiver of any of the unpaid property taxes. House Bill 3098 also changed the definition of the value that is placed on the abandoned manufactured home to better reflect the current market value for these abandoned homes. So House Bill 2031A is the result of discussions between the Oregon Association of County Tax Collectors and the Oregon Manufactured Housing Coalition in terms of just clarifying those treatments of unpaid taxes of abandoned dwellings on leased and rented land. So basically with the revenue impact, it's going to be minimal. It's indeterminate, but it will allow counties to collect a little bit of unpaid property taxes from landlords of manufactured home parks who are choosing to buy an abandoned manufactured structure and not destroy it.
Questions from the committee on the orientation? Clearly, colleagues, the knockdown costs for removal of an abandoned mobile home either limit out or zero the value of a $3,500 mobile home. And the ability to find a buyer who will pay more than that amount for a home that will cost at least that much money to knock down and move is limited or non-existent. And so there's some changes here that are systemic. Let's bring Diane Belt back from the Oregon Association of County Tax Collectors to explain the wisdom of the changes in raising the limit to $8,000 for an auction to be held. Ma'am?
Mr. Chair, once again for the record, my name is Diane Belt. I'm with the Oregon Association of County Tax Collectors and also the Personal Property Tax Collector for Washington County. The abandonment process was brought to us in 97 from the Manufactured Housing Coalition, and kind of in a nutshell, they were running up against issues where some of the older homes were, at that point in time, The market was at a frenzy. You couldn't find a place to put a newer home. And a lot of the older homes, you couldn't find a place to move those to because of maybe by virtue of their size or their age, there was no place for them to go. And people were having a very difficult time selling them. And quite frankly, some of them were what we call just plain old junkie. And the owner would walk away from the home, and that left the park owner with the problem of destroying or getting rid of the home. In 1997, the coalition and the tax collectors kind of sat down and talked about what we could do to make this work, because what would happen is the park would not only have to pay for disposal of the home, but they also sometimes, there were some back taxes that were due, and in order to get rid of it, they had to pay those taxes to get rid of the home. And they felt it was unfair that they had to keep buying their space back. So when we talked about it, $3,500 was kind of arrived at, I think a lot of numbers were batted around, and it basically kind of came down to what a bank, if you had $3,500 owing against the home, would the bank want to foreclose that loan, take the home, or would the bank just want to walk away from it? And I think what the message at that time was that the banks said they would probably walk away from a $3,500 debt because it would cost more to collect. So that's where initially the $3,500 kind of came from. The reason we're asking to raise that to $8,000, and it's been all over the board here in the last couple of months, the economy today, I think, reflects raising that value, and the cost to dispose of these homes is well over $4,000, and in some cases maybe more, depending upon the size. And I know in Washington County there is one landfill that will take them, but that isn't the case in a lot of counties. And this is also another situation where it's going to be more prevalent in some counties than it is other counties. I had one county call that they'd had their first abandonment, and it was very traumatic. $8,000 was agreed upon by everybody in the coalition as an amount that we felt, when I look at the tax revenue that's generated by that, it's probably maybe $80, $90 to $100. So then I have to ask myself, how much is it going to cost me to collect that? So it was kind of a number that we all agreed upon. We agreed that $3,500 probably needed to be raised. So that's how we arrived at that number. But what happened in the 1999 session was there was an issue where if the park would have a sale, what happens, the abandonment process basically, I gave you kind of a flow chart of how it works or how this house bill will make it work. But what happens is if somebody abandons their home, they walk from their home, the park sends out a 45-day notice to all lien holders of record that basically states that this home's been abandoned. You have 45 days to decide if you want to step in. By stepping in, typically you're going to have to enter into a storage agreement, which means you're going to pay the space rent. You might be responsible for any back space rent at that point, and you'll need to maintain the home. The county realizes that we can't do that because we do not have the funds to enter into a storage agreement. At the end of 45 days, if the value of the home is at this point under the statute, if it's $3,500 or less, the park can then destroy the home, dispose of the home. And by definition, dispose of personal property means that if reasonably appropriate, the landlord may throw away the property or may give it without consideration to a nonprofit organization or to a person unrelated to the landlord. The landlord may not retain the property for personal use or benefit, and that's in the statute. If the value of the home is over $3,500 currently, the park then has to have an auction. Well, what happened is when we, in 1997, we didn't address the issue. Well, what happens if nobody buys the home at the auction? Then what? So in 1999, what we decided would probably work would be that by virtue of the fact that nobody purchased it, the value must be $3,500 or less. And the taxes are canceled. What that kind of did was it opened the door for some landlords to take, and I'm not, just a few, to take possession of a home that has value and have the taxes canceled and keep it for their own use. And that was not the intent of this abandonment process. So the coalition has been working with the tax collectors, and we've been working all summer. And that's what House Bill 2031 is. And what it does is it addresses that condition, and we hope that it kind of closes the door. Because the market right now, what we're seeing is, we're seeing an awful lot of homes that are abandoned, and they're fairly nice new homes. Most of the time, there's going to be a lender that's going to step in and enter into a storage agreement. The taxes are going to be paid, and the landlord is going to be paid, and the home's going to be sold. But by increasing the value from $3,500 to $8,000 for disposal or destruction, we feel like we're more with currently what's happening. The taxes, like Lizbeth said, the taxes will be canceled. If the home is $8,000 or less and there's no sale required, then the home may be destroyed or disposed of. If there's no purchaser at the sale, then the home is deemed to be valued at $8,000 or less and shall be destroyed or disposed of. If there's insufficient funds from the sale to pay the taxes and the value is under $8,000, then the taxes would be canceled. Basically, the proceeds are distributed first to unpaid, to fees, then unpaid rents, and then taxes. So there's still a possibility that we can collect from a sale. And, if there's insufficient funds from the sale and the landlord is the purchaser of the home and it's valued over $8,000 and they dispose or destroy of it, then we will also cancel the tax. It's a complicated process. It's confusing. But it is needed, and I can answer any questions.
Questions from the committee?
Please.
Senator Castillo has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So how many of these abandoned mobile homes are we talking about? I mean, are there like 100 a year? Are there 1,000 a year? Can you kind of give us an estimate of how big this issue is in our state?
Sure, Mr. Chair. In Washington County, and let's see, Jackson County, Douglas County, Clackamas County, I think have the most manufactured homes in the state. And I think Washington County's like number 5 or number 6. I currently, and this is from the beginning, from the conception in 1997, I have managed 86 abandoned homes.
Okay.
So we're not talking about, you know, whole parks. I do have one park, however, in Washington County that we have had. I think we're getting close to 60 homes now that have been removed from the park, but we're talking about three-year-old homes that have a lender that's involved. And that's kind of an extreme. But when you talk with most of the other counties, it's fairly consistent. Some counties don't have any. Some counties have one or two. I was talking with Clatsop County. I think they've had 6 in 4 years. So when you look at the counties that have more manufactured housing, of course, yes, you're looking at a few more. But as far as it being hundreds and hundreds, no, it's not.
Thanks.
Further questions from the committee? Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Diane, I'm curious, who determines that it's worth $8,000 or less? And I was looking at
the ex-wife.
The definition on page 5 where it says, regardless of the current market value.
Right, Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, the current market value means the amount in cash is determined by the county assessor that could be reasonably expected to be paid for a manufactured dwelling or
so the answer
home.
Is the county assessor, or you would,
yes.
Be responsible to determine if it's worth more than $8,000.
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, that's correct. Typically what happens when we get a notice, the county sends back an acknowledgement or a letter to the attorney or the park, stating that this is the value we have on the roll, and understanding that some of our values on manufactured housing probably aren't quite what the market reflects. I do get a lot of calls from the park, and we do send an appraiser out to take a look at it, and then we do determine what is the current market value of that home today. Yes.
Actually, there's another aspect of the $8,000 threshold. That is the threshold at which a public auction will be held. Below that, it will not be held. It can be disposed of by the action by the park owner, declaration of abandonment. Oregon's a lien theory state, but that presumes that there's some residual value in the security. If there is abandonment, lenders have two remedies. They can waive the security and sue on the note, or they can seize and sell the security, applying the proceeds in a prescribed manner, first to the cost of sale, then to the unpaid rents or accrued obligations, and finally to the taxes. So with the tax collector being the last in the line and the questionable value of some of the security, the question of whether there's any residual value left in the security is the one that makes collections on these abandoned mobile homes very questionable. So this seems to me to be another one of those instances where we've made a recognition of the changing values and the cost of doing seizures and sales. If it costs you $2,000 to $3,000 to move one of these things,
other family values, Bill.
It's not a very equitable proposition for a required sale, a public auction sale. Any other persons here present that wish to offer testimony on the bill? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing. Open the ordinance. Go ahead. We'll public hearing open.
We have an A2 amendment. We discussed what the change.
Yes. Would you like to explain the A2 amendment?
Sure, Mr. Chair. It's attorney talk. There were a lot of spots. There were, I think, three places where the 3,000 did not get changed to 8. There were issues where it manufactured structure has a different meaning.
No substantive changes, just making it conform to
what
the tax assessors thought they needed.
Well, actually, it was more what the scribe, the scribe said. We had some ins and unders that should have been overs, and that's basically what it was.
Maize and shells, 3,500 to 8,000, structures versus dwellings, ins and unders. So it is, A2 amendments are brought forth to increase the precision of the drafting.
Mr. Chair, that's true.
Other questions? Senator Minnis has a question.
Well, could we just have a couple of minutes to look at these things?
Okay.
I didn't realize we had them as I was going through the bill, so I thought there was a reason in the bill for the $3,500 value in terms of determining whether there was a public sale or whether the landlord could dispose of the property without the public sale. But these amendments, did they change that? Or?
Yes, the amendments, I believe, make $8,000 the threshold of at which a public sale may be held. Below that of value, the landlord, on a declaration of abandonment, has the ability to offer a private sale or dispose of the property.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. And you know, if the value is under 8,000 and the landlord feels that, you know, they may have a buyer, they can still have an auction, but the requirement to have an auction is triggered if the value is over 8,000.
Question, Senator Kerr?
I wish you'd never brought up these amendments. Page 5, line 20, made a shell. You know, when you do union contracts, you look at those real closely. Why would you force a landlord to destroy or dispose of property? What if he wanted to make a tool shed out of it or, you know, put a farm family in there?
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, the abandonment process was designed to assist the park in getting rid of these homes, not for them to keep the homes for their benefit.
I see.
So if they want to destroy or dispose of the home, they certainly can give it away.
But they can't leave it on the...
But if they want to keep it...
So the question is whether or not the landlord would be allowed to convert to their own use.
And if they do, they will pay the taxes.
Right. So conversion indicates that there's residual value.
Mm-hmm.
And this set of amendments in this bill is designed to alleviate the tax owner from having to maintain a property that has no residual value.
Correct.
It's interesting, Mr. Chair, that this thing would make it all the way through the House and then have all these amendments to it.
It simply shows the relative greater care and more in...
Boy, did I give you an easy...
You did, didn't you?
Easy attorneys read what they...
Exercised by the senators as opposed to the House members.
Let's put that out on the Internet.
Senator Minnis?
Well, you know, I'm looking at this bill and I'm thinking this is maybe a perfect opportunity to direct some of these abandoned properties to some of the 501c3s that maybe do farm worker housing, things of that nature.
Yeah.
I mean, in one sense, you can leave the language permissive, may destroy or otherwise dispose of, but why not give a first right of refusal to 501c3s that are organized for the purpose of agricultural worker housing or something of that nature?
Mr. Chair, Senator Minnis, so you mean give them to... You still get into an issue of we're talking about removing them from the park.
Right.
Okay. There's still quite an expense in doing that.
Well, but again, I'm saying if you wanted to offer them to a 501c3, assuming that they would incur the cost of moving that from one place to another, it may be less expensive than buying one outright and then moving it, incurring the same moving cost. I guess what I'm saying is give them the option of doing that. They don't have to do it.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Menes, I know our county looked into, our senior services also looked into maybe picking some of these up for housing, but unfortunately they couldn't afford space rent.
Well, we're talking about agricultural farm worker housing where it's already on land that they have abysmal housing to begin mm-hmm. with.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Senator Menes, having a farm, there's only so many of those you can take. I know we have a couple of them. We've tried to find places for these to go, and a lot of folks just are not interested in the hassle.
Mm-hmm. Or they want new stuff.
Well, I think, Senator Menes, the placement of new or even alternative housing would trigger a whole series of requirements that many of these abandoned houses won't need. Single-pane windows, substandard wiring by current code.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, there are some questions about whether or not there would be a residual value in terms of replacing housing that would even be worse. But I'm not sure that the liability of the landowner issue would be overcome simply to trade up to this manufactured housing. Mr. Vice Chair?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think getting to that point that the disposal criteria, one is that it be offered to nonprofits now, isn't it? Or maybe given to a nonprofit?
Mr. Chair, Senator Barr, yes, that is part of the disposal to be given away to nonprofit organizations.
Right. The park owner, you know, would rather make that kind of a deal if it made sense to do that, to get somebody else to pay to move it, rather than pay the cost of disposing of it.
Yes, Senator Farioli, Senator Beyer, in a lot of cases where I've had some parks that have actually paid people to, you know, come in and take them out just to get the space back.
Well, they'll be paying for them one way or another to take them out.
Well, that's true, but our, like I say, we're not talking about huge amounts of abandonments, but, and the newer ones, you need to understand there is most likely a lien holder that's involved, so we're talking about the ones that are a little bit questionable, and basically, people aren't lining up at the door to get them.
Senator Menes, did that get to your question?
I'm just trying to give the committee another opportunity to help farm worker housing. That's all.
And I believe that if these abandoned houses have residual value and could be moved, and they were offered either as a donation and there was some way to cover the cost of moving them, I'm sure they would be.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is, again, that moving the mobile home or manufactured housing is not the greatest expense. The tear down, the actual transportation is the first phase, but you can't just park them on the wheels. They have to be sited with piers and supports for the flooring, and that can cost $2,000 to $3,000 to accomplish.
Yes, Senator Farioli, there's also permits. You have to get a placement permit, and with that, if there's a septic involved, there's permits for that. So the county's going to require quite a few permits for you to place one on property also.
Okay. So siting one of these things could be between $15,000 and $20,000 at the time.
Very possible.
That's the kind of blimey. Further questions? Senator Menes, you're engaged in the line-by-line examination of the changes in A2, so we will.
It looks like, actually, it looks fine to me. I'm just.
Okay. Any further questions from the committee in the public hearing portion? Any other person here present that wishes to offer testimony on the A2s or on House Bill 2031? Hearing and seeing none, we'll close the public hearing, open the work session.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Vice Chair.
Move the dash A2 amendments to House Bill 2031 A engrossed.
The amendments are moved by the Vice Chair, so A2 amendments are moved to House Bill 2031. Any discussion on the motion? Any objections to the motion? Hearing and seeing none, so moved.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Vice Chair.
Move House Bill 2031 A engrossed as amendment to the floor with a due pass.
Vice Chair moves House Bill 2031 as amended to the floor with a due pass. Recommendation, any questions on the motion? Any objections to the motion? So ordered, the chair will carry. That, colleagues, does conclude our session for this morning. We invite you to join the chair and the vice chair, if the vice chair so desires, to talk to the press about Senate Bill 520 and 521, which I think are worthy of a little promotion in this building because of the energy conservation opportunities they offer. We are in adjournment until tomorrow at 8:30.
I don't know.